on this episode of Take Line. Fallout from Game 1, in which the Atlanta Hawks beat the New York Knicks in what was an exciting game until the last moments. Spike Lee, don't dap Trae Young up anymore. Plus, more NBA playoff reactions. And SNY insider Ian Begley joins us. Plus, Take Survivor with Dr. Abdul El Sayed. I'm hurting right now. Take Line right now. I'm Jason Concepcion.
I'm Renee Montgomery.
Let's go!
Okay. We must unfortunately begin here with Knicks Hawks game one, the 4-5 matchup, Madison Square Garden, a nearly capacity crowd of 15,000, the largest public gathering in New York State since the pandemic began. It was loud, it was raucous, and then all of a sudden it was really a lot quieter at the very, very end. As Trae Young put the Hawks ahead, 107-105 is the final. To the victor go the spoils. So Renee,
let's go. Listen, okay, let me first start off by saying, yes, I know it was just one game. Okay, I've been an athlete my whole life. Of course I know it was just one game. However, I believe that this was a big win, not just because it was just one game, but we got a young team that needs confidence. We got a young team. It's a lot of their first times in the playoffs. So you go to Madison Square Garden, you got Spike Lee on the hardwood doing the A-Town stomp on the hardwood, and you got 15,000 fans when I just need to remind people, we weren't even in the bubble. I just have to remind people that in case they forgot that whole atmosphere of the bubble, we weren't there. So yes, we're excited that we're in the playoffs. We're playing great in the playoffs and we stole a game on the road. So I just had to start with that. Let's go! But I know it's not over yet. I just am excited. That's a good, huge win.
Listen, that's fine. Listen, as I've said many a time, we're playing with house money right now. Does it hurt? Yes. Is there pain? Yes. Did I die 3 times over the course of the last 2 minutes of that game and only to be resurrected, only to finally die again when Trae hit that floater? One of many fucking floaters?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Jason, can I just ask you something though off top, Jason?
Absolutely. Just again, the victor go the spoils. You can ask anything you want.
Was like, as a fan, did you guys feel like you guys came together? I mean, all those chants. I even went on Twitter and there was like Trae Young slander. They wanted to talk about his hair, I guess, because his float game was so strong. They're like, let me attack his hair. What? Is this the New York way? Like, did you feel very united with New York because of this? Because it felt like y'all band together.
This is what it is. It's the playoffs. This is banter. This is why it's fun. Right? You know, like, listen, Kendrick Perkins was on ESPN today saying the Knicks fans should be more humble. And but come on. Where everybody's excited. It was so fun to have a real crowd
exactly.
In an arena. Forget where it was. It could have been anywhere. That was just, like, really fun and great to see. To the slander and the F. Trae Young chants that began at the top of the game, you know, I saw people saying, oh, that fired him up. Don't poke the bear. Listen, Trae Young doesn't need that. Trae Young is a great player. It feels so good to hate someone again. I hate Trae Young, but he doesn't need that inspiration. He didn't need it. He's not inspired. He's not going to go out there and kill us because he heard some chants or because whatever. It's playoff time. It's game one of the playoffs in MSG. He said it was Times Square. It's many, many blocks from Times Square. He doesn't even know where it is. It's fine.
All he knows is that he was in the building. All he knows was he was in the building. And in the post-game interview, as you guys know, I cover the Hawks. In the post-game interview, he said on multiple occasions, I don't forget nothing. So do that, like, don't poke the bear thing. Yes, he was going to be turned up. But it's like you don't give players, for example, Donna Taurasi is a bear. And so when I had to guard her, you know, in Minnesota, Coach Reeve loved to say, Renee, she's yours. Handle it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Like, I got it,
hi,
Coach. Like,
Hi, Deanna. How are you today? How was your thing? Did you get
exactly
a lot of sleep
like,
out of that?
Yo, what up, baby? Bleed blue. Don't we, you know, Husky love, you know, like, I ain't poking that bear. Now, will Diana come and give me 25 regardless? Yes. But there is something to poking a bear. So for, you got to think about the psyche of a man that just hit the game winner with 0.9 seconds, he goes directly to, end quote, as I hit the floater, I just felt like everybody got quiet. He said, I was waiting on the FU chance again. I was excited. That was at the top of his brain, Jason. The
no,
top of it.
The FU chance will be back on Wednesday. Trae Young is a professional basketball player. He's been hearing, in his own words, by his own words in various interviews, he's been hearing hate since he was a kid, since he was in AAU, smallest player on the court,
yep,
talking about how he shouldn't be out there. He's heard that his whole career. This is not extra for him. He loves this. There's an argument maybe that it's too comfortable for him doing that, but like this is what... This is what a full arena should sound like. This is what a full
this is
arena
the stuff
in New
that
York
dreams
should
are
sound
made
like.
Of.
Yes, and this is, don't we love it? Aren't we talking about it right now? Didn't they need
I
a sports
it.
Center right now? This
Listen,
is what
I want
we
you guys
love.
To know. We love this, okay?
Yeah, they love it.
Like, even, and let me just say, I'm happy we won. Like, but I feel like it's so
oh,
evenly
wow.
matched.
Oh, wow, spoiler alert. Don't spoil it. Renee, are you happy they won?
Yeah, just to throw it out there, I'm really happy and excited that we won. However, I am very aware that next game, I could be sitting in the exact same position,
that's
Jason, because we won on a buzzer beater. Like, we won on
that's
a floater. It's not like we handled the New York Knicks. Right. So I just want to say that even though we won, I know that there might be times we don't win, I'm still going to love it. Like, this is what we were yearning for as fans. Real playoff atmosphere with
yes.
fans mad, fans going crazy.
This is
I'm
exactly
yelling at Jason
it.
On the
That's
internet.
What
like
we
this,
wanted.
This is what we really wanted. So at the end of the day, like, of course I'm hyped that the Hawks won, but I'm really hyped at what's happening. Like, this is like sports are really back. Like, they're back now.
They're really back. Let me just say this. I'm not mad at the fans. I love what the fans did. I have some criticisms for Spike. Number one, Knick fan Spike. Spike, don't dap up the opposition. Don't do it.
Dap me up, bro!
Don't dap up Trey. Don't let him touch that, like, pioneering filmmaking hand. Don't do it. He's the enemy when he's in there, Spike. Look what
bro,
he did
Spike,
to us.
We love you, baby. We love you here in the A.
See?
The Midas don't touch. Him... Grant you the Midas touch, baby.
Don't let him do it. Man, I will say that it, it, just like we said last week, you know, like, yes, the Knicks won 3 in the regular season against the Hawks, but different team, different coach for a bunch of those games. Trey was injured for the last game. They have the exact same record coming into the playoffs.
Crazy.
It's going to be close. It's going to be nip and tuck, and, you know, it's going to be very, very close.
So to that point, like, what adjustments do you guys need to make, though? Like, you know, every team, game one to game two, like, we the Hawks have to make adjustments as well. Everybody yeah. has to make adjustments. What's y'all's for the Knicks?
I was looking up Elfrid Payton, Knicks starter, Elfrid Payton's plus minus for the last couple of weeks. My guy fell off the bottom of, I'm not even kidding. I tweeted it. He fell off the bottom of the screen, his plus minus. This has been
oh my
so
God,
tough.
Jason.
He fell off the bottom of the grav and he came back up a little bit, like a little point, and then he fell back down. He looked like crypto over the last couple of weeks. He is the only starter who did not score. Yeah. Everybody else scored. And I just think we got to go a different way. It's time for Derek. Like, it's going to be too close. We can't. He only played 8 minutes, but we can't give up those 8. It's time for Derek Rose to start. And we'll figure out with Quickly and maybe with Frank Ntilikina, figure out the rest of the minutes, but it's going to be too close to give away those minutes. The other thing is Julius Randle will bounce back somehow.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he forced a little bit early and should have looked to maybe playmake. But he's going to figure out a way to get off that. I'm not concerned yeah. about that. You know, are we going to get another Alec Burks 27-point game again?
18 in the fourth quarter.
Was,
what is that?
That was nuts. But I think Julius Randle will figure out a way. And listen, Trey, we're just going to have to throw a bunch of different looks at him. He's too good to just show him one thing.
Agreed. And that pick and roll.
It's deadly. It's deadly. His handle is too good, and he can shoot it from too far out. It's just
And speaking of, like, spectacular, Trae Young in his debut, he finished with 32 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. That was his playoff debut. LeBron James is the only other player with 30 points, 10 assists, and 5 rebounds in their postseason debut. So just to put it in perspective, because sometimes people need to see those kind of numbers side by side, Trae Young's debut night was, like, literally the stuff people dream of.
Yeah. And one more thing. You know, the Hawks are just a dangerous offensive team. They were number 9 offense during the season. They have a gang of people that can shoot 40% from 3. Bogdanovich was absolutely nails this game. He, as I said last week, he's a guy that I'm legitimately scared of. The Knicks did it primarily with offense. They were very scrappy. It's a bunch of times they could have gone away in that game, but they hit big shots. Definitely. I'd love to see them find that defensive identity again. Listen, you can't, again, Trey.
Tom Thibodeau team. I mean, that's literally what Tom Thibodeau is known for. So I don't see the defense.
So can we reconnect with that? Of course, yep. Trey is just going to be tough, but can we reconnect with that defensive mentality? Because I think it was a little bit of gravy with the offense. We got, again, Alec Burks with 27 points plus 8 over the course of the game. He was hitting, like, pump and goes, like, on the baseline. Like,
it was unbelievable. I just, like, and that's another thing. So talking about adjustments, you know, I think for as much as everyone was saying the New York Knicks missed a lot of shots, Bogey missed, Danilo Gallinari missed a lot of shots. Bogey hit the biggest shot of the game when he hit that 3-pointer with just under a minute left to tie it up at 103.
That swung it. That was a game-swinging type of shot.
That was a huge play. But before that, it wasn't like Bogey and Gallo were just on fire. We actually didn't hit a lot. Like, a lot of those shots were the second half is what I'll say. So I'm just excited. Look, that was game one. I'm excited because we got probably 6 more of those.
Yeah, it looks like a pick 'em series, as many have said. It looks, again, exact same record coming in. It's going to be a long series. Adam, my heart can't take this much more.
Let's go! So as we know, we can talk about it all day because the Knicks and Hawks series might be the one that you and I are watching the closest, Jason, but there were definitely some other great games all weekend. You know, the first round of the playoffs did not disappoint. So let's start with the Bucks and the Heat. Another finals, last second shot from Chris Middleton, a little dribble to the right, step back, cash money to lead Milwaukee over Miami. What are your thoughts? What are we thinking?
I think that it was a real battle, and it seemed like one of those games where, the Bucks are a little scared again or just a little shaky coming out of the gate. But I'm really impressed with the Bucks this win. Number one, Middleton being the guy who gets the shot at the end. And the second thing is they shot 5 for 31 from 3, and they won that game. Do you know how many times they've won a game where they've shot that percentage?
How much?
None, because it never happened. This is the worst 3-point shooting game that they've shot all season, and they won. That's huge to me. That shows that this team is a kind of like has a different kind of spine than they have had in previous incarnations. I really love that they won that game. I'm not saying that the Heat are going to just go away. That is absolutely not the case with an Eric Spoelstra coach team and a Pat Riley run franchise. And with Jimmy Butler on that squad and Goran Dragic and the guys they have. But that was a huge marker for me, for them winning that game. What did you think?
Okay, so you don't care that they're like the higher seed, 1 by 2 Mm-mm. points.
I don't, because again, that 5 for 31 and then to come back and win it.
Okay, but that 5 for 31, I will raise you a Butler finishing with 17 points, 4 for 22 shooting from the field. I don't know. To me, that is very rare as well, because we know Jimmy Buckets is called Jimmy Buckets for a reason. So to me, those two things could pretty much, let's say, offset each other. And shouts to Giannis, who was the primary defender on Butler for 32 possessions as opposed to 10 possessions in their entire series last year. But to me, I guess when you get to the playoffs, you know, It was different. I had a different mindset. Like when we were the number one team in Minnesota, our first couple of rounds, we wanted people to know we are the number one seed. We wanted our play to show it. We wanted the score to reflect it. We wanted to show that, look, there's a difference here because it sets the tone. Like to me, look, and I get it. It's so evenly matched in the NBA, but a 109-107 win, Milwaukee over Miami, I mean, that's...
But let me ask you this, okay? So the Heat are not your typical lower seed, right? That this is like, this is a somewhat of a rivalry. This is a team that the Bucks have history with. This would be like, you know, if the Sparks fell because of injuries or whatever, fell to a lower seed, and then you play them. Yes, you're the number one, but you're also looking at them as a different type of team. And I feel like all the underlying stats, if you didn't show somebody the score and said the Bucks play the Heat game one, they shot 5 for 31. What do you think happened? I think you'd think the Heat won that game.
But you would have to mention that Jimmy Butler went 4 for 22.
That's
if you
true.
Told them, if you told people those two stat lines, I think that people would not know what happened because everyone knows that this Miami team goes where Jimmy Butler goes. So if Jimmy Butler, while he had 17 points, 4 for 22 is a tough night. Like,
it's a
period.
Tough. That said, people have been asking season after season, when are they going to unleash Giannis as a defender? And with all that length and all that athleticism, and when are they going to put him on the other team's primary scorer? They did it.
They did it. And shouts to Giannis because the superstars, you know, like a lot of times there's that idea to rest the superstars. You don't want them to guard the other superstar because you need them on offense. So shouts to Giannis for taking that step and being like, yo, I have to lock him down. You gave an example about the Sparks. Well, honestly, the Lakers are kind of that example in a sense of they've been hurt all year. Everybody thought, bow, they're just going to turn it on for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. It's going to be amazing because guess what? They're the Lakers. But you're saying that that's what should happen with Miami, and it just doesn't happen that way. Your season record is for a reason. That's how the team has been performing. And so let's move on to the Lakers and Phoenix, where Phoenix beat them 99-90. But the real problem was the Lakers played pretty much the same way they played, but you're playing a good team now. And it just, there's no on and off switch. I know that some players have on and off switches. I firmly believe it. I've seen players just flip the switch and I'm like, whoa. But teams, that's different.
I agree with you. I think part of the problem is with that on and off switch mentality, that idea is you can have an on and off switch if you've got a group that has played together a lot.
Yep.
This Lakers team is not a group that has played together a lot, or even you could argue a little. They've got a lot of new faces. James has been out. He had the longest injury stretch of his entire career. Davis was in and out of the lineup. They bring in Andre Drummond as a new face. And it's the results are not confidence inspiring. First of all, big ups to Phoenix who won and have been one of the great stories of the season. Chris Paul cementing his place as, you know, top four, top three point guard all time. He took a knock, had a shoulder injury, left the game, came back, played, didn't look himself, was really favoring that left hand a lot, but still, Devin Booker, 34 points, picked up the pace. Chris Paul still had 8 assists, still played good defense. And I gotta say, was it just me or did DeAndre Ayton look like he played really solid defense against Anthony Davis?
No,
now, listen,
100.
I'm not saying Anthony Davis has the talent to overcome any kind of defense, but DeAndre Ayton was up in his jersey bothering him with length for a lot of that game. And Davis came away with 13 points, 5 of 16 from the field, did have 3 blocks, was at minus 18 in the game. Man, that was really concerning if you're a Laker fan.
But, I mean, Jason, to that point, Davis even said to himself, like, we're not going to win a lot of games with me playing like that. You know, like, so he acknowledged that he definitely didn't play his best. But to your point, DeAndre Ayton, you have to give people credit. Sometimes I'm sure there were a lot of shots in there that Anthony Davis on any other circumstance would make it. So he probably missed a lot of his makeable shots. But you also have to give credit where credit is due. DeAndre Ayton just didn't make it easy on him.
He played well.
He played really hard. He didn't make it easy on him. And to that point, you know, you talked about the plus minuses. LeBron was the only one with a positive plus minus. I'm not really into those. Like, those numbers can be skewed if you're on the court with,
they can be
depending
skewed
on him.
Yeah, for
yes,
sure.
But that is telling that when LeBron is on the court, they're a plus two team. When Anthony Davis is on the court, they're a minus 18. But Kyle Kuzma, 0 points in 19 minutes. Yes, I mean, that's a pretty loud stat. Everyone's talking about Andre Drummond and can he be a part of it. But if you have somebody playing 19 minutes and they give you a goose egg, that's tough. That's tough to overcome. That's a lot of minutes.
That absolutely can't happen.
You over here trying to bench Payne after 8 minutes of no production. Come on, Kuzma.
Okay, wait, let's talk about, this has been a big point of conversation amongst Laker fans, amongst the media. Andre Drummond, Lakers brought him in at the trade deadline. They are starting him alongside Davis, a two big lineup. And it just is, for whatever kind of benefits that you're thinking you're getting, rim protection, shot blocking, another big, overwhelm a team with size, you get that extra rebounding. It does not look to be working. I would argue that Drummond is doing a better job of guarding the Lakers than he is guarding Phoenix, The spacing is all clogged up. They don't have the same kind of driving lanes. You push Davis farther out on the court. Now, he can do that, right? He can do that. But that's not exactly where you would want to play him. You want that whole side of the court open for him to roam. And, man, it just does not look like it's working. One, Renee, what do you think? And two, if from a player perspective, right, something's not working, it's playoff time. How do you approach that player and say, okay, we got to try something different, especially a player of Drummond's cachet who has been a named player in the league?
There's two parts to it. It's tough because the NBA has just a new mold, and we all know what that mold is. It's like 3-point is king. And it's so king. Everything that teams are trying to do is, how can we spread the floor? How can we get spacing? How can we drive, get a layup, or drive, get a dunk, or drive and get a kick to a three? Like, that's literally the analytics of the NBA. So when you're a player that just doesn't fit into that mold, like Andre Drummond, he's my guy. Shouts to Bleed Blue, UConn Husky.
Yeah.
It's so tough for the traditional big right now because there's just not a place for them. There's the new style where you see a Joker and you see a Joel Embiid. What do they have in common? They're big men that have skill sets of a guard. That's the new wave. That's what you have to do. A Rudy Gobert, Andre Drummond, those bigs, it's just not the way of the NBA right now, the analytics and how it's fallen. And so how do you talk to a player like that? Look, you got to bring them to the side and be like, hey, listen, we're trying to do something big. We're trying to win a championship, and the numbers just aren't adding up. Look at the numbers when you're in the lineup. Look at our numbers when we have this lineup. Look at the analytics when you're on the court. You know, you have to take one for the team in a sense of your minutes might be limited, but you might get a championship out of it. Like, that's how you have to talk to players. I mean, he knows now, you know, he got sat in Cleveland for X amount of time until they could move him somewhere else. And I think that's a problem. It shouldn't happen that way. But it's because people don't necessarily know what to do with the traditional big anymore. And you just got to be real with them. Like, bro, we trying to win a championship and teams are guarding us a certain way when you're on the court. So when you're out there, you know, we can still start them. And we might pull them 5 minutes into it, but it's when you're out there, make the most of it. Do your thing. Don't change your game. But just as far as minutes-wise, they might be less moving forward.
Man, all I can think is Marc Gasol must have, like, hit Frank Vogel's car or something. Or, like, I don't know what he did, but he can't find the court with Google Maps.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you'd expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero Croissant and 3-gram net carb Hero Pain au Chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
So there's a little bit of controversy with this Utah-Memphis game. Utah, as we know, lost by 3 to Memphis, 112-109. But Donovan Mitchell, Let me set it up. I like where this is going. Before the game, he said, look, I feel good. There's always going to be some soreness, but I'm ready to go tonight. No pain. I'm excited to get going. And then after the game, Spider Mitchell, at Spider Mitchell says, sorry, y'all. I wish I could say more. I'll be out there soon. We know now, since there's some things happening, you know, break it. Look, Jason, you have some theories. So I would love to hear what happened with this Utah-Memphis situation and what happened with Donovan Mitchell.
I'm going to lay out a conspiracy theory that is not even really that far-fetched. And you tell me what you think, okay?
Okay.
Utah's the number one seed. Defensive powerhouse, hit a bunch of threes. They got a lot of players hitting on all cylinders right now. They got a bench headlined by Jordan Clarkson, Joe Ingles. You know, they got the best rim protector in the league. I think they looked across the bracket. They saw the Grizzlies limp into the playoffs, have to fight through the play-in to get there. And I think they thought, okay, Mitchell is coming off the ankle sprain. Maybe we can steal another day and a half of rest here. We're going to roll over this eighth seed that is probably a little winded after coming through the play-in to get here. And we're at home. We're at altitude at home. And so let's get a little cute. I think we win this game without Donovan Mitchell. And I think that bit them. That's personally what I think.
So you think the team made a business decision that I think we can beat Memphis without Donovan. So let's get him one more game of rest. He'll be back out there. Just give him a little bit more rest. Okay.
And I think they sold it to Donovan because, listen, if Donovan Mitchell wanted to play and was like, I'm playing, I don't know that I buy that the Utah Jazz hold firm and go, absolutely not. If we take this, the pregame quote to be factual, I feel good, always going to be soreness, I'm ready to go tonight. I think if Mitchell pushed the issue, they let him play. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I feel.
So you're saying that you think he just found out. He just found out and was like, basically they were like,
I think they sold it to him. I think he agreed with it. I think if they came to him and said, listen, we can beat these guys. I think we got them. Like, we're at home.
Yeah.
Rudy, everybody's ready to go. Why don't you just sit this one? We're going to win this series. We're going to win this game. Sit this one out. It'll be fine. And I think it just bit him. And because I honestly feel like if Donovan Mitchell was like, no, I'm going, then he would have went. And guess what happened? It turns out the Grizzlies aren't Grizzlies. They're freaking dogs.
Shout to the Memphis Grizzlies, man. Because, you know, that's another thing. I have to make sure, because a lot of times in TV, and we are basically TV, it'll be like, if there's the number one seed, no matter what the lower seed does, you always talk about the number one seed. So let me switch gears a little bit. Come on, Brooks. 31 points, 13 for 26 from the floor. But what I love is he's in his post game, he said, they just had some guys out there that couldn't guard me. Like, woo!
I get tired watching him. He makes me tired because, man, he's the type of player that if I was like in an alley with him, I'd be like, man, I'm about to get mugged and scored on. He is just nonstop it on both sides.
Agreed.
He is in people's jersey on the defensive side. And then on offense, this guy just does not stop working you, working you, working you, working you.
Brooks it's and unreal. Ja Morant, I'm telling you, that the way they play with this chip on their shoulder, this underdog and mentality embraced. And look, the thing about it is these players watch the news. I said it earlier with Trae Young and all of them. If you wonder why these guys be gassed up in the game and that you see them turned up, they watch First Take. They watch all of these different shows that may have opinions about the game. So if you see the players, like you could clearly tell, and this is a fact, literally all of the ESPN analysts, other than one, shouts to Monta McNutt, everyone said that they were going to lose in every single round. And so if you wonder why they're running around crazy, why they're turned up, why they're going off, players, like, that's chalkboard stuff. Like, players take that to heart. And so for me, when you see him say, yeah, there's some guys out there just couldn't guard me, that's him letting people know, next time y'all talk about our game and talk about this awesome defense, you better let them know that there's guys that can't guard us.
They could not guard. And that's the other thing. Listen, yes, Donovan Mitchell was not in the game.
Right.
You're a top defense in this league for years. Rudy Gobert is a number one defense in a box. He is a number one rim
protector.
Supposed
to be the defensive player of the year.
Come on.
Clint Capella didn't even make the finalist.
You have people who really know basketball, whose opinions I absolutely respect, who can make dark horse MVP candidates for Rudy Gobert because...
Oh my God.
That's how much he embodies their defensive ethos and their ability. Why couldn't they stop anybody? Why couldn't they stop Dylan Brooks? Why couldn't they do that?
Questions that need to be answered. Clint Capella was not a finalist, and I only say that because he's number one in rebounds at the end of the season. You know, because halfway through the season, people are like, oh yeah, you're a low-ranked team. We ended up the number five team. He's the number one in rebounding, number three in block shots. Man, I'm not saying he should have necessarily won, but how is that not a finalist?
I mean, he gave the Knicks a lot of problems. I'll just say that.
That's what he does on a normal basis. And so I'm just saying, you know how when people tell you to put up or shut up? Okay, Utah, you're the top team for a reason.
Renee, I wanted to ask you about this. So Brian Windhorst wrote a piece today, and in it he writes, quote, Utah Jazz star Donovan Mitchell was incensed at the late decision to scratch him from Sunday's playoff opener, and it deepened tensions with the team regarding his recovery from right ankle sprain, sources told ESPN. That source is probably named Onovan Itchel. we expect Donovan to play in game two now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would expect that Donovan's going to play in game two. Also, so to your point, I do think that it was probably told this way. First of all, players want to play. So Donovan Mitchell, I believe he missed 16 regular season games before missing that one. So knowing how long he's been out, I can pretty much assume that he was really hyped to play. First of all, there's advertisements all over TV. He wants to be a part of the action. It's the playoffs. It's the whole thing you've been playing for all season long. But to your point, I do think probably the medical staff was like, yo, if we could get you to look, imagine this.
Hey,
you don't play in this game. There's three games until the next game after that. So we would be able to get you five more days of rest. You know, I could just see how the conversation went. So Donovan Mitchell probably was like, I want to play, but all right, whatever, man. Like, I get you. And then when they lost, when they dropped
now one, you're mad. Now you're mad.
Now he's big mad, and I get it because he's like, so I was ready to go. Let me get this straight. I was ready to go. I literally said, I feel good. Of course, it's going to be a little sore, but I'm ready to roll tonight. I'm excited to get going. You guys tell me to sit out, and now we're 0-1. Why is that a big deal? Because players understand games matter, and everybody can be like, it's just one game. But if anybody that's listening has ever been in a series, which I've been in a series before, a five-game series with LA Sparks, getting those three wins are like the hardest thing ever. So when you say it's just one game, I remember every single game. It's like those 40 minutes are the longest minutes ever. And it's like you break it down by 4 minute periods and you just break the game down so much that you would never just say it's just one game. Donovan Mitchell gets that.
You can't give it away like that. Okay, let's go to number four, Los Angeles Clippers versus number five, Jason Gallagher's team, the Dallas Mavericks. And let me just say this. Patrick Beverley cannot guard Luka Doncic. When Luka Doncic did the he's too small thing.
Yeah, that was
he is absolutely right. Luka is just too big and too much of a load for but I was shocked at this final score. Like, come on. The Clippers, you got Kawhi and you got Paul George. And from game to game, the Mavericks don't know who their number two scorer is going to be. But man, Luka Doncic is a load.
You know, last year, we all remember what happened in the bubble with the Clippers. And their whole thing this year was, we are not that same Clippers team. I mean, everything about what they were doing. The players are even practicing now. I remember somebody said something like, last year, the whole team only practiced together like three times, which is pretty wild, but with load management and you know, different things going on, I can believe it. So this year they're like, all right, we're actually going to practice. We're actually going to practice together. We're not going to be that same team, but it's scary because it's looking like that same team that in the bubble was unstable, was not solid. And what I mean by solid is Kawhi had 26 points, and that's why you can't always look at stats. Kawhi had 26 points. He was 9 for 22, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, but the impact felt in the game. Paul George, 23 points, 8 for 18, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. But it's the impact felt in the game. I felt like Kawhi and Paul George should have controlled the game. I mean, if you asked who's the best players in that game before the game, people would have mentioned their names. And they didn't play bad, don't get me wrong. But the story of the game was Luka Doncic.
Two of the best two-way wings in the league, certainly over the last several years. And I just think those two guys need to be much more involved in trying to stop Luka from going for 31 points, 10 rebounds, and 11 assists, because he just did whatever he wanted to do, got wherever he wanted to go.
And that's a part of being a good player.
Yeah, people forget he is LeBron James size. Like, he is a big guy, and I think he's just too big for Pat Beverley. Like, they got to put wings on him.
But the same way we just talked about Giannis taking that on himself, that he's like, all right, look, I'm going to guard Butler. Well, we have to see Kawhi or Paul George be like, look, I'm going to take the assignment of guarding Luka. We can alternate it, but we can't let Luka go 11 for 24, get 10 That's rebounds, crazy. 11 assists, his third career postseason triple-double. Like, just those guys have to just decide. Like, it's not like we're asking non-defenders to just all of a sudden be defenders. These are well-known two-way players. Yep. So for me, they just have to stand up. Like, you have to just decide, you know, tonight is not going to happen. And when I say tonight, game two is set for Tuesday night at 7:30 on TNT. They have to decide, like, it ain't happening tonight. Like, that just has to be something they decide within.
Next, Boston 93, Brooklyn Nets 104. I got to say, first of all, we expected this. We don't need to talk about this too much. This is an absolutely expected outcome. I will say, as a New York Knicks fan, I found it quite humorous that as the Knicks sold out Madison Square Garden, James Harden starred in a social video for the Nets where he was like, hey, use promo code Nets Basketball for great seats to them. But we expected this.
Crazy,
you know,
though.
Boston is down a star. Jason Tatum struggled a little bit, and the Nets just have too much firepower, right? This is probably a sweep.
This is like Brooklyn looking like a top team. That's all it is, moving on to the next round. But what do you think about this Portland-Denver now? Portland 123, Denver 109. Now, we talked about this. We actually talked about this in the play-in game scenario, but we said the same sentiments. No one wants to see Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum in any type of playoff post game. It's Dame time. Like, you know how the fourth quarter is supposed to be Dame time? Well, all postseason feels like Dame time. That's just not who you want to match up with. What are your thoughts?
If you're Denver, this can't happen. Like, I understand Jamal Murray lost for the season with that really, really tough knee injury. But, like, Michael Porter Jr. has been this guy has taken the leap in the absence of Jamal Murray. You still have Jokic, who was feasting offensively. I told you the take that Dame ruins the playoffs every single year because they beat a team that they shouldn't beat, and then they go forward and they get stomped. But man, I was really surprised at this outcome. I was shocked.
I mean, I think a lot of people were, and I think a lot of people weren't.
Not that they would win, but 123-109?
No, that's a whooping. That's like they got whooped. But now when we talk about MVP talk, does that change things? I mean, should the MVP's higher ranked team take a whooping like that? I mean, that's, and grant you, it's not a one-man team, a one-man show, right. But a lot of times when they talk about All-Star, they talk about these end-of-the-year awards, is how well is your team doing? This is an MVP candidate in the Joker. Grant you, he played great. 34 points, 16 rebounds, one assist. That's the part to me. One assist. That's one of his strongest skill sets. We talk about his passing. Yeah. The one assist is what's interesting to me.
He was passing the ball, you know. Here's where the Jamal Murray thing comes in. He has less targets. That said, I wouldn't change it because it is a regular season award. Obviously, this isn't ideal. Obviously, we're overreacting to game ones. Overreacting to the Knicks
loss. Understand,
this is what we do.
This is why we're here.
This
to overreact.
Is what we do. We got to overreact. But listen, there is precedent for this. Dirk Nowitzki famously won the MVP award and then got stomped out in the playoffs. It's a regular season award. I don't change my mind.
Oh, wait, so you thought
loss.
The Joker should be the regular season MVP anyway?
I think he should be the MVP. I think he's my MVP.
You know what? I think if we ran the tape, it's actually interesting because at the time that we asked, I picked Damian Lillard. I was like, if we had to pick it today, I had picked Damian Lillard just because, I mean, his numbers are out of this world. Again, I don't know why he always ends up falling off the list. It's like the list ever evolves, and then it's like certain players just are no longer on there. But I mean, Damian Lillard is one of those guys that he's been killing it to that
he's
point.
Killing it.
If the Joker gets stomped out in the playoffs, that's just not a good look. But it doesn't matter when it comes to player of the year. But What do you think about Philly and DC? The Washington Wizards, Philadelphia 76ers, 125, the Wizards, 118. I mean, Bill and Westbrook were on a tear, you know, and hit just a really good team. What are your thoughts?
So, first of all, shouts to the Washington Wizards on an amazing turnaround to the season, on getting into the playoffs, on proving a lot of people wrong on this game, which was a lot closer than many people expected, including myself. I think they had a lead at halftime, if I'm not mistaken. But Philly has too many weapons. They're too good. They got Embiid into foul trouble early, and that played a big role. Maybe if they can continue to get Embiid into foul trouble, maybe these are the next three games are close, but I expect Philly to romp either a sweep or a five game series. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Philly is a good team. And this is what I mean by, if you're a good team and you want people to know it, you need to handle teams that you should beat the teams you're supposed to beat. They say this during the regular season. If you're a higher seed, you should beat the clubs that you should beat. And I think it's no different in the playoffs. It was a close game. I think it was a very winnable game for DC in a sense
of... It was winnable. Extremely winnable.
Extremely winnable. And I don't know, if I was the 76ers, I'd be a little alarmed by that. But what really hurt the Wizards is 6 turnovers from Russell Westbrook at very key times. That's for the whole game. He had 6. But Bradley Beal also had 6 turnovers. That's not to mention that Joel Embiid had 5 of his own. But when you have 2 of your main guys with 12 turnovers and some of them being in crunch time.
Russ had that step on the line where he bobbled the ball. And then that was just, that was crushing.
But to that point, if you're the Wizards, you watch back the tape, you start to see, wait a minute, guys, we're in this game.
We clean this up, right? We clean this up a little bit. That said, there's a lot of things that I don't know how replicable they are. It really feels like if you're Washington, you really wasted one here. Like, you needed this one.
That was the one. That was the one. Because Joel Embiid in foul trouble, it was the perfect storm.
It's not
going to
happen.
And he still got 30. And by the way, Joel Embiid was in foul trouble. He still ended up dropping 30 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. So he's just that, again, another MVP candidate that willed his team to win. But yeah, I think that if the Wizards had like their shot at the surprise game, that was the one. Yeah.
Well, it's been an incredibly fun first weekend of the playoffs, except for the game on Sunday, which I'll stop talking about. I just can't wait for the rest of the games this week, Renee. I can't wait to talk about them as we head to the finals.
Yes.
He's SNY's NBA insider. He's been a part of my life for a long time. He's been covering the New York Knicks for years. He's the host of the NBA digital show, The Putback. Go check it out. Ian Begley, welcome to Take Line. It's great to see you.
Great to be with you guys. And it's so fitting. We have a diehard Knicks fan and a Hawks enthusiast on the other side. So this is
you perfect. Better.
First question, and it's a really important one, Ian. How do we trick Alfred Payton into thinking the game is Thursday? What can we do? Can we change his clocks? Can we change all the clocks in the facility? How can we get him to not show up to the arena on Wednesday?
Jason, it's amazing because, you know, throughout the course of the year, I understood why fans wanted to see other players start at point guard. And I always thought, well, you know, they're winning, so why change it? And then last 20 games of the regular season, Payton just seemed to get worse and worse. And I feel for him because it seems like the struggle, you know, the momentum towards struggling, it's hard to get out of that. And he was a non-factor game one. I have to think Tom Thibodeau at least thinks about tweaking his starting lineup going into game two. And I also have to think that Frank Ntilikina maybe gets some more minutes defending Trae Young earlier on in game two, based on what we saw on Sunday.
How big of a deal is it that the Hawks stole game one at MSG, where home court advantage, as we know, is huge in the playoffs, especially for a team like ours who has won 12 straight home games?
Yeah, I wasn't that surprised by it. I mean, I just think these teams are evenly matched. I knew that the Knicks were going to have a tough time over the course of this series with Trae Young and the Hawks shooting and Clint Capela. So I wasn't that surprised by it. If they lose game two on Wednesday, that's when you're going to start to see people hitting the panic button. That's when you're going to start to see Jason losing his mind a little bit. It's going to get ugly. But I'm not surprised that they lost game one. I mean, they were right there. You know, you could say that RJ Barrett, he tipped the pass and it went right to Bogdanovich. Bogdanovich hit the three. Like,
biggest play of the game.
Yeah, it haunts me still.
Yeah, it could have just gone the other way. So I wasn't that stunned by it.
Ian, the Knicks under Tom Thibodeau have really developed this kind of like defensive identity. Now, the Hawks are a very combustible offensive team. Trae Young, Bogdanovich, Danilo Gallinari was one of seven, but he's shooting north of 40% from three over the course of the season. It felt like the Knicks stayed in it primarily through some really surprising offense from Alec Burks, who just went off in shocking fashion. Can the Knicks get back to that defensive identity against this team?
I don't think so. I don't think they're going to play that, you know, elite level defense that we saw over the course of the regular season, because this Hawks team is just clicking so well offensively. And the Knicks just, they don't have that personnel to come in and, you know, send somebody on Trae Young and try to slow him down. It's going to be a group effort. And I don't think they're going to be successful, as often as they'd like to be, because Atlanta is so talented. So I think if you're Renee, if I were you, I'd be so happy that the Knicks, you know, Derrick Rose.
Oh, Ian, you have no idea.
Derrick Rose was like, had played a great game. Alec Burks was out of his mind. They even got stuff from Obi Toppin, and they got from
that was
production
crazy.
From Emmanuel Quickley, and they still lost the game. So to me, like, the Hawks have to be feeling pretty good based on how the game unfolded and the idea that they got the win.
Well, you know, we feel great. Thank you for asking, Ian. I feel great over here. We feel great in Atlanta, but we're not naive to think that we've won the series just off of first game. So what do you think it looks like for Julius Randle to get back on track? Because as we know, he's going to get most improved player. There's no way he doesn't get it. He's been a monster all season long. That was the first game that we've seen him look a little human. Mm-hmm. So what should we expect from a Julius Randle game two?
I think he'll take the same shots. And if he doesn't take the same shots, I think that's a problem for the Knicks, because just from my vantage point, the shots that he was missing on Sunday were shots that he has taken all year, and more often than not, he's made those shots. So I think you want to see him take the same shots if you're the Knicks, and also get rid of the ball a little bit quicker when the double team comes. There were a couple possessions, particularly late in that third quarter, back-to-back possessions where he struggled against an extra defender, and Lou Williams took advantage on the other end. That was really a big sequence in that game. And so Randle's been so good all year, surveying the defense, finding open teammates, especially when a team throws a second defender at him. And he wasn't the same on Sunday. So I think if he gets back to that going into game two, that would be a good development for the Knicks.
Finally, Ian, before we ask you about the putback, some predictions in this series. What do you expect to see? It is going to be, I think, very close. These teams had the exact same record coming in. I think the fact that the Knicks won three games over the Hawks this season, 3-0, during the regular season, is a little bit of fool's gold. That was a different team before Nate McMillan came in. The last game, Trae Young had the injury. What do you expect to see over the course of this series?
My big prediction, actually, for game three, Jason, is I think we're going to see Renee courtside, State Farm Arena. And I think something tells me Renee is going to start an F Julius Randle chant to get back at the Garden crowd because what happened on Sunday. That's my boldest prediction.
I love this guy.
As far as the rest of the series, I mean, it's a 4-5 series. This seems like a great matchup. So I think that we're going to go 6, maybe 7. And if we don't go 6 or 7 and the Hawks really take control of this thing, the Knicks are going to have a lot of questions, you know, moving forward. And not to say that they didn't have a great season, but, you know, if things play out where Randle doesn't play his best and, you know, they're exposed at the lead guard, they're going to have a lot more questions going into that offseason and how they're building this roster out.
One more question about that. Just let's say that Julius Randle, I expect him to bounce back.
So do I.
But if his game one becomes the theme, you know, sports is a ruthless business. Do the Knicks look at extending Randle differently after that?
I think that maybe the numbers change, but I would think that the idea of extending him remains the same. I think he showed you over the course of this season that what he's doing is not a fluke. So if he struggles in 4, 5, 6 games shooting the ball, that tells you something because it's the playoffs and it's a big stage, but I don't think you shift everything based on that. Maybe it just changes the amount of the contract, but I think it also maybe changes the way that you build around Julius Randle and who you look to put alongside him. Maybe not above him, but alongside him, maybe different players. Because if you think that you can run your offense through Julius Randle regularly, that maybe you look at a different type of point guard. But if you're not as sure about that, then it causes you to look, you know, elsewhere for maybe a more ball dominant point guard. So I think the Knicks can learn a lot about what they want to do moving forward based on what happens in the series. But Jason, I'm with you. I think Julius Randle, I mean, the body of work this year is too strong. I think he's going to bounce back.
No, I agree. He's, like I said, the clear favorite for most improved. Now, if we could just flip that script a little bit. Okay, so the Hawks, we won game one. But if we were, hypothetically, I would never want to see this to lose. Given all the weapons we had, what we've done in the offseason, you know, what does, and especially the incredible job that Coach Nate McMillan has done. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable. What do you see, like, Atlanta's future?
Yeah, I think it's bright. I mean, you look at the way that this team has played since March 1st when Nate McMillan took over. And I guess this is how Travis Schlenk and everybody envisioned it when they made the moves they made in the offseason. Obviously, they got crushed by injuries earlier in the season. So I don't think it's fair to put everything on Nate McMillan coaching well and look at what Lloyd Pierce wasn't doing. I don't think that's fair. But the idea that it's Trae Young and it's great shooting and there's a rim protector in Clint Capela, I mean, it just makes sense. I think the questions you have to answer is, what do you do with John Collins? Do you rehire Nate McMillan, which, I mean, I think they should. I think it's a no-brainer. Where do you fill out the back end of the rotation? But, you know, the big questions to me have been answered here based on how the Hawks have looked over the past few months. It's just an ideal roster around Trae Young. Just let him go, let him score, let him create. And that's what we've seen from Atlanta.
I'd like to see a little less of it over the course of this series. But finally, what can we expect next on the putback?
So we will be just doing live shows throughout the postseason. So Jason, I think you hope that maybe we get two live shows in over the course of this series. Renee, I think you're hoping we get maybe one more in and then we call it a night. But we'll be doing some live shows. And then after the playoffs, we'll be looking at the offseason, the draft, free agency, all that fun stuff.
He's SNY NBA insider for the Knicks and the Nets. Ian Begley, thanks, man, for joining
Take Line. Yes,
thank you, guys. Great to be with you.
And now it is time for Take Survivor, the game in which only the strongest take survives. Joining us today, he is a physician, an epidemiologist, and the former Detroit health commissioner. Kind of a big deal. He's also the host of the Crooked podcast, America Dissected, which comes out every Tuesday. Man, get off our corner. He is Dr. Abdul El Said. Doctor, how are you today?
I am great. This is what the 13-year-old version of me thought he would be doing, is talking about sports all day, and I've clearly failed on that mission, but I'm just going to say I had Tuesday first, so you all can find a different day.
Okay. He is also an Arsenal fan, so pray for him as you pray for me. Also joining us today, our co-host, co-owner of the Atlanta Dream, Renee Montgomery. Renee, how are you feeling today? I know how you're feeling.
It's a good day to have a good day after you get a big win in the playoffs to knock the New York Knicks off of their little pedestal. It feels good, baby.
Well, I unfortunately must take that because to the victor, the spoils. Also joining today, he's a producer on this podcast, Elijah Cohen. Elijah, how are you?
I'm good, Jason, and it is Cohen. C-O-N-E, pronounced Cohen, not Cohen. Long time correction coming.
Elijah Cohn. Elijah Cohn.
Now that we got that straight.
Also a producer on this podcast, a director of All Caps NBA, Jason Gallagher. Jason, how are you?
That was beautifully said, Jason. Thank you so much for having me. My Mavericks beat the Clippers. They wanted us. They got us. We're here.
All right.
Spicy.
Just to catch everybody up on the rules and some of the tweaks, we will begin each round with a prompt. Our contestants will answer. They and the increased voting pool, which is everybody that is on this Zoom, will then vote on which take should be ejected from the island, and our contestants move on. Are you ready to begin, contestants?
Let's get it.
Ready to go.
Woo!
Our first prompt. What's the most underrated sports injury? We hear a lot about ACLs. We hear a lot about Achilles. But we don't hear about turf toe that much. We don't hear about plantar fasciitis that much. Everybody, what is the most underrated sports injury? Let's start with the good doctor, Dr. Abdul. What's the most underrated sports injury?
I'm going to go ahead and say the good old-fashioned concussion. It is extremely common. And the bad part about a concussion is that you don't always appreciate the long-term consequence. It doesn't usually pull you out of the game immediately, but you get enough of them over a long period of time and it can be devastating. And so I'd say it's probably the most underrated sports injury.
The doctor with his official medical diagnosis of the concussion. Moving on to Renee. Renee, what's the most underrated sports injury?
The most underrated sports injury is dehydration. And that is because if you could catch a cramp with dehydration, but also there's a lot of thirsty players out there for buckets, so they're playing selfishly. And so they need to be hydrated because they're causing the team a breakdown. So everybody needs to stay hydrated with H2O, Gatorade. Get that selfishness out of your heart. Don't stay thirsty, my friends. Stay hydrated, my friends.
Find that fresh water, says Renee Montgomery. Over to you, Elijah Cohen. Cohn. Elijah Cohn. What is your answer?
Jason, you said it, and I gotta agree. It's turf toe. It's like an extremely painful injury that's designed just to make fans be unsympathetic. It sounds much less bad than it is. We need to rename it to something like lightning toe, like, or like hammer toe. It's extremely painful whenever you step on it, and turf toe can be rebranded to whatever JK Rowling has.
Oh, wow. Here's my take. Take toe out of it. When you hear toe, you automatically think, oh, it's not that bad. Make it like a death foot or something like that. Jason Gallagher, what is your most underrated sports injury?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's constipation. And here's why.
It's both
mental and physical. There's nothing worse than getting the anxiety of, oh no, things are going wrong and I can't really talk about it. So you try, it screws up your warmups. It screws up your mind in the game. I'm telling you, I had constipation before a 5K once and it ruined the whole experience and there was no national broadcast. Constipation.
I've heard it's the most common injury in curling.
Wow. Too,
so there's that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh my God. Okay. Jason Gallagher, it's time to add some roughage to your diet. Let's go to the voting now. Just to remind you, everybody here will be voting for the worst take in the round, and the voting pool has been expanded. It includes our producer Zuri, our engineer Sarah, Mia, Caroline. You will all be voting as well. Place your votes, direct them towards Zuri in the DMs. Who will it be? Who is leaving us today? Will it be concussions? Gosh, I'll tell you, we never talk about concussions. That's a great point by the doctor. Will it be dehydration? Renee's pick of dehydration. So many other things can come from dehydration: cramps, bad Instagram photos, etc. Elijah says it's turf toe. It's extremely painful. It stops you from running, from planting, from jumping. But toe? Or will it be Jason Gallagher's constipation? Constipation. Don't clench. And maybe you can clear that up. Votes coming in now. We have got one vote for Elijah and turf toe. One vote for Jason Gallagher and constipation. One vote for Renee, dehydration. Another vote for Elijah. Two votes Elijah, one vote for Jason, one vote for Renee. Another vote for Jason Gallagher. 2-2, Elijah, Jason Gallagher. Another vote for Jason Gallagher. It is now three votes to Jason Gallagher. And then with our final vote and our first evictee, Jason Gallagher, four votes. You are gone. No. What do you have to say?
I was going for the injury of the everyman and or woman. And, you know, it's I figured it was relatable. You're right. I should check out this concussion thing people are talking about. That is definitely underrated.
Never heard
we don't
of it.
Talk about
Never
it
heard of it, folks.
Anyways, goodbye. God bless. Can't wait to vote you all off.
Jason is going to the bathroom, but we will continue with the questions. Our second prompt. Who is the best fictional doctor? Best fictional doctor. Let's start with you, Elijah. Who's the best fictional doctor?
Jason, the best fictional doctor is Dr. House. He's a man who didn't have any time for bullshit. Half the show was just sketches of him making fun of dumb patients. And the rest of the show was him just not giving a fuck, taking as many pills as he could while struggling to get through his workday. I found it extremely relatable, maybe even aspirational. Dr. House.
Elijah, is it ever lupus?
One time it was lupus.
Let's move on. Renee, who is the best fictional doctor?
Okay, so I'm going with the good doctor, and hear me out. The line is, this is a doctor who has a crazy past, a troubled past. We all watch Norman Bates in the Bates Motel, so you mean to tell me that Norman Bates goes on to be a doctor in a series and we don't know about his mysterious troubled past? Yeah, we do, buddy. Side note, way to pivot and refocus yourself. So I think he's found a way to do good considering his dark past. So the good doctor doing good.
Dr. Norman Bates, he left the hotel industry and then went into medical care. What an incredible pick. Let's go to our actual doctor on the panel. Dr. Abdul, who's the best fictional doctor?
So for me, this was all about who I'd actually want to hang out with. And for me, it was Turk from Scrubs.
Wow.
Right? He's not the main character in the show, but you could hang out with Turk for days. And so if I'm going to be doing a residency, it's going to be with Turk in Scrubs.
Wow, Turk from Scrubs, a lot of doctors to pull from that cast. But listen, certainly one of the most fun-loving doctors, played by Donald Faison. Now let's go to our voting. Who will be the next to leave the island? Will it be Dr. Abdul saying Christopher Turk from Scrubs is the best fictional doctor? Will it be Renee saying the murderer, Dr. Norman Bates, is the best fictional doctor? Or will it be Elijah, his pick, Dr. House, in the long-running series starring the cantankerous Dr. House? Votes coming in now. What will the results be? I will remind the audience that we have expanded the voting pool.
Yes.
Today we have Sarah, we have Mia, we have Caroline and Zuri all voting. And then, of course, Jason Gallagher, assuming he's back from dropping the kids off at the pool, will also be voting in this round. And here are our results. One vote for Elijah, Dr. House. One vote for Renee. 1-1. One vote again for Renee. It's 2-1. One vote for Elijah. It is 2-2. And our final vote for our next evictee from the island comes in for Renee Montgomery. And her pick, the murderous Dr. Norman Bates, has left the island. Renee, what do you have to say?
I was really considering going with Dr. McStuffins, and now I know that I 100% should have went fictional, had a black doctor, and killed it. You guys, this is the first time not making it. May the odds be ever in your favor.
Wow. Always with the class, except when her team is winning against my team.
Let's go!
Let's go to the finals. It is Dr. Abdul versus Elijah. And our final question. Best personality, real person, with Dr. as a nickname. Best real person with the nickname Doctor. Who will it be? Let's go to the real doctor. Doctor, who's the best real doctor, non-doctor, nickname Doctor?
So I've got a three-year-old, and we spent a lot of time with this doctor. It's Dr. Seuss. Teaching the kids all the lessons. Never actually finished a PhD, but has taught a lot of people a lot of things.
It is the author, Dr. Seuss. Wow.
Plus, the Republicans tried to cancel him a while back, so you know, you got to be.
I love that
in
as
Seuss
well.
Camp.
Illustrator, author, Dr. Seuss. Incredible pick.
Yeah.
Elijah, who's the best personality with Doctor in their nickname?
Jason, I'm going to have to go with Dr. Phil. He's not actually a doctor, is he? I also misinterpreted this question, but I'm going to say that Dr. Phil at this point is more of a cultural symbol, more of a sex symbol at this point. A man who's out there doing it every day. People like him. They like his voice. They like his beautiful mustache. He's out there making the points that other people are afraid to make, asking the questions other people are afraid to question. He's a doctor for our souls. Dr. Phil, thank you.
I'm just going to put this out there. If people vote for Dr. Phil over Dr. Seuss, right? The man just asked the basic question everybody else should have asked.
This is why people think this contest is rigged, but let's move on. I'll remind everybody the voting.
I also want to point out kind of a problematic answer.
By all the Dr. Phil's out there.
Cut his mic.
Cut his mic.
I will remind the voting pool that we are voting for the winner now. And let's go to the voting. Will it be Elijah with his pick of Dr. Phil? You sound like a cow in an outhouse trying to find a can of worms. That's like something that Dr. Phil might say. Or will it be our actual doctor, Dr. Abdul El Sayed, who says it is Dr. Seuss who is the best personality with Doctor in the nickname? Wrote many a classic book, some of them a little problematic, but well, you know, we figured that out, hopefully, by just not offering those problematic books to our impressionable young generation going forward. Votes coming in now. You ever vote with your thumb up your butt, Elijah?
Only when I'm constipated, Jason.
That's what I would say, as Dr. Phil. And now the votes coming in for the winner. We have one vote for Elijah to win. One vote for Dr. Abdul to win. Another vote for Dr. Abdul to win. 2-1, Dr. Abdul, one vote for Elijah. Another, it's tied up. Elijah, 2. Dr. Abdul, 2. Another vote for Elijah, it is 3-3. And another vote for Dr. Abdul, it is 3-3.
Wow.
Final vote coming in now for our winner, Elijah Cohn. Oh. You have won Teak Survivor with the pick of Dr. Phil as the best personality with doctor and then nickname. He didn't even truly understand the category, and yet he wins. Elijah to the victor of the spoils. What do you have to say?
You're kicking and flopping like a fish.
She's on me like a duck on a June bug.
I think I'd be madder than a wet hen myself.
I just want to thank the YouTube commenters who believed in me while the game was rigged. This is for you guys. Subscribe to Takeline on YouTube.
Wow.
Oh my God. Dr. Abdul, thank you for joining us. Incredible, and I'm sorry that this happened, but tell us, please promote America Dissected.
Absolutely. So two things. Number one, Dr. Phil actually had a PhD in psychology. So I'm just going to put that out there. Two, America Dissected is a fantastic podcast when you want to hear an actual doctor talk about actual doctor things, but in an interesting way. We're dissecting all of the most important stories where health and society meet. I hope that you'll check us out just after you listen to Take Line on Tuesdays. Go ahead and download America Dissected and check it out. This week, we will have a discussion about how to build an anti-racist healthcare system with the one and only Professor Ibram X. Kendi. I hope you'll check it out.
One more question, and it's just as important as that. As a doctor, please, how do we fix Arsenal?
Oh, goodness. Look, I think we've got some promising young players. I do think we've got to think a little bit about the culture of the team. It seems like, under Mikel Arteta, there just hasn't been a very clear sense of direction about where the club is going. I hope that they figure that out. The other point is, the fact that Arsenal even thought about joining the Super League is itself a real problem. And I thought about, switching teams, to be honest. But, once you join a team, you gotta keep with them for life. So, I'm stuck.
Well, Doctor, thank you for joining us, and thank you for listening.
Is this the dagger?
This time for buzzer beaters, where we talk the stories that we didn't cover in the show because of time. Jason, I'm going to let you handle this.
Okay, so we both picked Julio Jones calling into Undisputed with Shannon Sharpe and Lizard Man Skip Bayless. So this happened this morning. We're taping this on a Monday during the live broadcast of Undisputed. Shannon Sharpe appeared to call Atlanta Falcons receiver Julio Jones and ask Jones about the current trade rumors that are swirling around while on speakerphone. During this time, Shannon has Julio on.
Yikes.
And he never mentions that they are on live TV. This caused a lot of conversation about speakerphone etiquette, back and forth. That said, man, there are actually like lawyer legal implications, as you well know, on whenever someone comes on a program, there needs to be releases. They need to be informed. There's also
But do
the
you
phone
think
calls.
He knew? Because don't you think he knew? You think he knew?
I think he had to know. I think that there's no world in which he didn't know. That said, I think that there's a universe in which Shannon texts Julio and then assumes that Julio would think, okay, what else would I be texting him for? You know what I mean? Like, and then when he makes the call and Skip is in the background saying, hello, that maybe it went through Shannon's mind that, oh, of course Julio thinks that we're on Undisputed right now. But did he actually, was he actually aware that they were rolling? Man, I don't, what do you think?
I think Julio Jones had no idea. Only reason I say that is, like, who does a rollout like that? We've
That's
seen J.J. Watt. He made a whole production out of, hey, I'm leaving. I want to tell the fans why.
Right.
He showed the fans where he was going next. Players use that as an opportunity to promote, market. I just feel like if that was where he was going to announce to the world that he was no longer going to be a Falcon. Now, this is coming off of seeing him in a Dallas Cowboys hoodie, just randomly somebody put, this is coming off of allegations, but he hadn't addressed them yet. I don't think, listen, call me naive. I really thought he was talking to his homie And then he realized, wait, am I on TV?
Right. And he could have thought, oh, they're on a break and maybe they just want to know what's going on. Now, Whitney McIntosh on my Twitter mention says that you can hear Taft, she thinks, in the background saying, quote, can you remind him we're on television right now?
So now, Jason,
it really feels like they were sweating. So that leads me to believe they were sweating.
Why would a producer? We got producers on this show.
Yeah.
And we do a lot of different interviews. That none of them are hopping in the middle of the interview and like, Jason, make sure you know they know that we're recording this. That's just not a normal behavior if everything was already cleared beforehand. That's all I'm going to say, because that's crazy.
So let me ask you this, right? Number one, Fox Sports Legal is absolutely going, don't do this again. Please don't do this again. Because if that is the case and Julio Jones didn't know, there's a world in which Julio Jones is like, I'm suing Fox Sports One because they not only taped me without my consent, but then they aired it on live TV. That won't happen. But if that is the case, you know how this works. What I would expect to happen is Julio's reps get at Fox Sports and say, you owe us. Big time.
Like, whenever we come back for that favor, it's a yes. Like, it's one of those type things.
Yes, because you owe us.
Also, let me put this on your brain. Like, I'm in the media journalism world. So to Julio's defense, I've had people call me and be like, hey, just for context, this is off the record. Or just one of those calls where it makes it seem like, we just want to know where your head is at. Can you give us context? Now, if Julio Jones thought it was one of those calls, just so people understand, like, every time someone calls you from the media doesn't mean that you're going to be live on air. I've been called from plenty of my media friends, LaChyna Robinson, all of them. They just want to know what you're thinking so that when they talk about you on air, they know. So just so people understand, this is not a wild thing that could have happened. He could have just thought that Shannon Sharpe was calling him to see where his head was at because they're discussing it. And he thought he was giving him a nugget like, oh, I'm out of here, Unc. Like, I'm gone. It's a nightmare.
Now,
I'm scared.
Listen here, if that is the case, and you see Julio Jones's second cousin co-host Undisputed with Shannon Sharp, don't question why, because you know why. That
it's gonna be called Second Take with Julio, baby.
That's it for us this week. Follow and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe to Take Line Show on YouTube for exclusive video clips from this episode, plus my digital series, All Caps NBA, which airs every Friday. Check it out. Like and subscribe. 5-star ratings. We will accept nothing else. See you next week. Oh, let me survive this week.
Let's go!
Take Line is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Carlton Gillespie and Zuri Irvin. Our executive producers are myself and Sandy Gerard. Our contributing producers are Caroline Reston, Elijah Cohn, and Jason Gallagher. Engineering, editing, and sound design by Sarah Gibble-Laska and the folks at Chapter 4. And our theme music is produced by Brian Vasquez.